97.9 FM, WCHL, and the UNC College of Journalism and Mass Communication presents Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examinations of issues of overarching importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions to problems in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the UNC campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, a roundup of all that's happening on a legal front in college sports. And if we have time, we'll look at some pro sports activity as well. Our guest, Tim Epstein, a partner and chair of the Sports Law Group at Smith Amundsen and a professor of sports law at Loyola University School of Law. Tim, about a week ago, SB Nation printed an article talking about all the legal challenges. They didn't get all of them, but the top five. And an important distinction here is the writer of this article indicated from least to greatest, those that are most likely to entirely change the NC2A, which I think is an important point, not just to have some sort of effect, but to entirely change the way the NC2A is run. So let's start with the first one, the Players Union Kane Coulter case, Northwestern University. What's happening there?
Well, what initially happened was you had a push by the scholarship football players at Northwestern in Evanston, making a move to essentially be able to unionize, because you can't just say now we have a union and we're going to push forward and now we want to bargain with you, athletic department at Northwestern. They have to be granted the ability to do that, and the way they do that is they go to the National Labor Relations Board. And so a petition was made before the NLRB, local office in Chicago, that the Northwestern scholarship football players could be regarded as employees, because you have to be an employee to form a union, and that they were employees of Northwestern, and as such, they should be afforded the right to organize as a union. And the local NLRB office in Chicago said, we agree, we think you should have that right, so why don't you guys vote to see if you want to join this particular union? And that vote recently took place. And in the meantime, Northwestern, not happy with the decision that their football players could be regarded as employees, appealed to the national office of the NLRB. And that's currently pending before them in Washington, D.C. And in the meantime, the ballots that were cast by the scholarship football players to join this union, that's under lock and key. So we're not going to know what happens with that until we get a ruling from the national office in D.C.
Okay, and the reason SB Nation puts this as the lowest level threat for a couple of reasons. Number one, Northwestern's a private school, and this would affect only would not have any effect on state schools. And whoever makes the final ruling, if it's the national NLRB or if it's the U.S. Supreme Court, would have to decide that players are university employees, and that seems, unlikely when the letter of intent says exactly the opposite and players sign that letter of intent.
The way the letter of intent would play in here, I think, is, and I don't think there's been a good enough challenge to letter of intent. It's basically an adhesion contract, right? So when you say adhesion contract, you mean that you really don't have a choice. If you don't sign this thing, you can't participate.
So it's my way or the highway, essentially.
Exactly. And so I don't know how much the letter of intent would hold up. You know, you see similar arguments with personal injuries and, you know, people sign these waivers that, in five-point font that are 30 pages long and, you know, is that going to be enforceable? So the enforceability of the NLI, I don't know if that's necessarily going to play in here, but you did bring up a good point relative to the national office and the U.S. Supreme Court. I think one of the reasons that SB Nation ranks this one low is simply based on timing. If we get down to some of the other issues, they're more ripe, whether it be O'Banion that's supposed to, go to trial coming up this month in June, next month, as opposed to this one, which could make its way all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, which, you know, the soonest you would see them make a decision on this going through all the proceedings would probably be 4 or 5 years out.
Okay, we have about 2 minutes in this segment, so let's quickly talk about the concussions case. Essentially, players got concussions. NC2A knew about it, didn't do enough to protect those players' health or to deal with them after the fact. Pretty similar to what the NFL faced and settled in a $765 million lawsuit.
Just to be clear, relative to the NFL, the $765 million proposal for settlement between the NFL and certain NFL players, former NFL players, that was rejected by Judge Anita Brody.
She thinks it's not enough.
Well, what she said was that they didn't give enough proof. By her simple math, by the numbers that they had proposed, if each of the claimants made a minimal claim, there would not be enough money to pay out. So there was no substantiating exhibits given along with the settlement proposal, and it's currently in the party's hands to be able to show her proof that this settlement would be viable.
So in the minute that we have left in this segment, essentially, though, at its core, this suit says the governing body knew what was going on and didn't do enough to protect players. This one, the concussion case they're talking about, it involves college players.
Right, and it's not just college football players. It's anyone who would have suffered a concussion across some varied sports, both male and female, in practice or in games.
Women's soccer, and hockey, for example.
Exactly.
All right, we'll talk about the three others when Sports Focus returns.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking today about all the legal stuff going on in college athletics with Tim Epstein, who teaches law at Loyola University and is also chair of the sports law group at Smith Amundsen. We were talking about, Tim, this list from SB Nation of the challenges to the NC2A, the third highest, or actually third of the list for SB Nation was the Sean Alston case. Sean Alston said he had to take out money to pay for the full cost of school at West Virginia while his coach made $3 million, and they see something wrong with scholarships not covering the full cost of attendance. What's happening with the Alston case, and where, how threatening is that to the NC2A?
Well, see, what the Alston case seems to suggest is that there is a gap between what a student athlete who's on a full scholarship gets versus, say, someone in the band or a studio art major, and what they would get with a full scholarship. And guess what? They're right. And this is something that was addressed within NCAA legislation that came out, but the member institutions, that's schools and conferences within the NCAA, they decided not to move forward with this at the Division I level. And I think the implications for that, you're going to see potentially in August, where you're looking at a potential structural change within the NCAA between the haves and the have-nots, relative haves and have-nots within Division I, because it got voted down. What this one does is this case, the Alston case, is attempting to, through the courts, make sure that student-athletes get that basically $2,000 difference between what they get in their full ride for athletics versus full cost of attendance.
Again, the writer for this SB article gives odds for how much, I believe it's a he, Matt Crossman, he thinks, you know, this could have an effect. And according to him, the odds here are fairly high. The reason is that former Oklahoma quarterback Jason White filed essentially the same lawsuit back in 2006 and won a $10 million settlement. Are those cases that similar, that the Alston case and the White case?
You know, there are a large amount of similarities as between the White case and the Alston case. What your listeners should keep in mind, though, just because something settles for a significant amount of money doesn't necessarily reflect the merits of that particular case, but that the NCAA at that point did not want to create precedent across the board for how they would deal with these cases. You see this in a number of cases, including the Oliver lawsuit relative to a baseball prospect and how he could deal with agents and lawyers while he was still in college. That was settled for a dollar amount as well, even though the NCAA may have actually won at the trial or appellate court level. So keeping that in mind, I just don't think back in 2006 the NCAA or its member institutions was prepared to have a conversation and of a decision about making up that difference between a full athletic scholarship and a full cost of attendance. I think what you're going to see, though, is that the haves within Division I have the ability to make up that difference and may go ahead and do so. So this may prompt this along. The NCAA, this case may prompt the NCAA to actually act, which would potentially moot this case.
So we've gone through three cases, and according to SB Nation, on a 10-point threat level scale, we've gone from 2 to 4 to 6, and now we get to the what's called the Kessler case, antitrust case, called that because Jeffrey Kessler is the attorney. And now we're starting to get up into big numbers as far as what SB considers a potential threat. And let me just read a line from the article. Where other lawsuits nibble at the edges of the NC2A's rules and regulations, this one strikes straight at the heart of the matter. And that's why SB Nation would consider this a major potential, major threat to the NC2A. It's brand new. It's filed a week ago. What are the essentials of the Kessler case?
Well, basically in Kessler, and to go back to the quote that you just pulled from this article, is where in the Alston case you have a discussion of making up the difference between full athletic scholarship versus full cost of attendance being somewhere in the $2,000 neighborhood, and that if that $2,000 is met, if that gap is met, then maybe you moot that case. At least the relief that the Kessler case is seeking, that would not be an option. Kessler wants to basically blow up the whole structure of how the NCAA deals with student-athletes, because what it says is there is only one market in place for student-athletes, one viable market, and that is the NCAA. And the NCAA and the conferences are basically artificially limiting the amount of financial aid that you can give to a student-athlete. So not only are we talking about the NCAA, but you're talking about the what people call the BCS conferences, the ACC, the SEC, Pac-10, Big Ten, so on and so forth. So what they're trying to do here, what Kessler's trying to do here, is to say that we need to throw out the whole system. It's not just an easy fix like in Alston where we're talking about a set dollar amount, but we need to blow up the whole system because under antitrust law, it just does not work. It's complete and completely anti-competitive. So we need to get in there and blow it up.
We'll pick back up on that when Sports Focus returns.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking about a sort of a roundup of all that's happening on the legal front in college sports with Tim Epstein, partner and chair of the Sports Law Group at Smith Amundsen and a professor of sports law at Loyola. Tim, we were talking about the Kessler case and a couple of things about this I find particularly interesting. He is essentially charging collusion, the NC2A and the major conferences, keeping the compensation that these players get, keeping it to a certain level. Also says that the NC2A has been found in violation of antitrust before, and it goes back to Oklahoma appearing too many times on television. back when the rules were such that there was a limit on that. And now we know everybody appears on television as many times as they want, and that's where all this big money is coming from. So are these cases following the money, or is it something that, you know, people are saying, look, this system is broken and we just need to fix it?
I don't know personally Kessler's motivation, but certainly what the article discusses and what others have said is that this is, at least for him, not about seeking out money.
Because they're not even seeking damages.
Exactly. Well, that's the problem is if you're seeking damages, then the potential correction, now you're talking about the Alston case. You're talking about that $2,000 difference. But what he says is the structure that sets up that difference in the first place is absurd, that needs to be completely thrown out, and we need to start with an open market that will allow for student athletes coming out of high school to be able to go basically to the highest bidder or to go to wherever they think would be the best fit for them. So the Kessler lawsuit would allow that to happen, because the injunctive relief that they're seeking is that the conferences and the NCAA can no longer go by this, what they believe is an arbitrary ceiling on what student athletes can receive in the forms of scholarship, whether it be for tuition, books, housing, room and board, so on and so forth.
All right, so SB Nation gives that lawsuit a 7.5 out of 10 in terms of its threat level to the structure of the NCAA. And the final one is the Ed O'Bannon case. Essentially, this started as players not being compensated for the use of their likenesses in games, EA Sports, for example. And now it's morphed into much more than that, hasn't it?
It has. And I think as far as that goes, you're certainly talking about following the money. While there is an excessive amount of revenue to be derived from video games and certainly from the most popular lines of video games relative to sports, broadcast money is that's the true gold mine here for revenue that's derived from the participation of these student athletes that goes to the NCAA and its member institutions. So that's the money they're now seeking, where the money really is. So this is a SB Nation gets it right. This is a huge challenge, and why it gets ranked so high, I believe, is because the NCAA has failed in many of its attempts to get this lawsuit tossed. And we're now set for trial to start on June 9th.
And one of the parties, which is a collegiate licensing company, has already offered to pay $40 million to get out of it. So
Right. There,
some people are running scared, it would seem, or at least are being very cautious about what this could lead to.
Right. Well, I think with anything, again, as we've discussed previously on the show, is that decisions get made on a cost-benefit analysis with lawsuits. So regardless of the merits of the lawsuit, some people, whether it be CLC or EA or the NCAA, would look at these lawsuits, would look at the O'Bannon and Keller cases and say, okay, how much is it going to cost me in legal fees? How much is it going to cost me in bad press? And if I try to buy my piece now, will that be the smart play? And certainly with O'Bannon, there are dollar amounts that might make this the smart play to settle out. But so far, the NCAA doesn't seem interested.
And that does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Tim Epstein, and to engineer Gary Kirk. Thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall of the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance, and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a production of UNC's College of Journalism and Mass Communication. Check out our comprehensive community calendar, photo galleries, and all of our news stories and more from 97.9 FM WCHL on chapelboro.com.